Coming up on this week's Colchonero Chat, we break down Atletico's 1-1 draw with Alaves at the weekend, preview the upcoming fixture away to Leganes, and we are joined by a very special guest to break all this down. Ewan McTeer joins us. Stick with us.
El Niño Torres, hay campo para Griezmann, hay campo para Griezmann, y veo gol, y pinta bien, y pinta bien, y pinta bien, gol.
¡Gol! Hola, señores y señoras. Welcome to another edition of Colchonero Chat, the podcast of record of IntoTheCalderon.com and a proud member of the SB Nation family of blogs. My name is Jeremy Barron. I'm the co-editor of Into the Calderon. You can follow me at JB Barron. Joined today by co-editor Robbie Dunn.
How are you doing, Jeremy?
Doing well, Robbie. You can follow Robbie on Twitter at Robbie J. Dunn. He changed the handle there.
I was wondering if you were going to mention that, but yeah, I just changed it.
I noticed. Yeah. Sly as a fox there. And we are joined today by a very special guest. He is a La Liga journalist, the author of Eibar the Brave, and Marca's English division. He is their self-styled Atletico Madrid guy. Ewan McTeer joins us.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Our pleasure, Ewan. You can follow Ewan on Twitter at emcteer. And today we're going to discuss Atletico's draw with Alaves. Lots to talk about there, as well as previewing the weekend's game against Leganes. The second consecutive weekend Atleti will play a newly promoted side. But first, a few news items to discuss before we launch into some hardcore analysis. Atletico are finalizing loan deals for three players as their summer concludes on a busy note. Oliver Torres, Javier Marquillo, and Diogo Jota, according to Alberto Barbaro and Marca. Oliver is set to join Porto on loan with a 20 million euro option to buy. He is in Portugal right now. Javier Manquillo is in England having a medical for Sunderland, according to Sky Sports. He is set to join on loan with an option of 11 million. And Diogo Jota is going to Porto as well. He has an option to buy of 22 million euros. So it doesn't look like he has convinced Simeone.
Really? I didn't actually know that.
Yep. That's from what I saw actually yesterday and today I saw it.
What?
An option to buy for Jota, who had a good preseason.
Yeah, this is very unprofessional of us. I didn't see that already. Jesus.
Yeah, it's very strange. Looks like another Mendes client failing to impress.
Yeah, but he was spoken so highly of by anyone I spoke to that knew what he was about in Portugal. Like, just must be a Simeone thing, a work rate, a mentality thing. But, yeah, that's... Wow.
Anyway. That is a strange one.
Yeah.
And also, yesterday, the rumors came about Hakan Çalhanoğlu. Atleti reportedly interested in him, his agent saying that there is interest from Atleti and Tottenham Hotspur. But there is some suspicion that this is just a ploy to get Çalhanoğlu a new contract with Leverkusen. Robbie, you and your thoughts on that?
Do you want to go first, Ewan, or?
Yeah, I mean, it's there's been a lot of strange dealings going on, like the ones we just mentioned. The big name ones, the Gabeiro and the Bastos, they all seem normal enough. But the ones they've made this summer with your players worth about, you know, under 10 million, there's been a lot of to and fro, a lot of ones that have come in, a lot of ones that have gone the other way, and with about half of them, you could say that there's been ulterior motives probably behind the deals, depending who their agent is, depending on whether Simeone wants them in for his squad, or whether the club is trying to put them in for some sort of marketing purposes, depending what country they come from. There's been a lot of deals, and you can only imagine that Simeone isn't best impressed that these players getting put into his squad and then taken out, when I would believe he doesn't really want half of these players anyway.
Yeah, it would seem that way as well. That Jota really blindsided me one, but I mean, that's abnormal. Like, it's not, he hasn't even played a game. He barely played in the preseason, and his attitude, there's nothing really been mentioned about a fight or anything like that. That's just his agents after getting him into a higher bracket, wage bracket, by moving to Atletico, and now he's not dropping down from that, and he's going to move to Porto or wherever it happens to be. Sorry, it was Porto he was linked with, yeah?
Yeah, he's going to Porto, yeah. It looks like.
And and he's going to end up making a lot of money. He's automatically increased his wages. But yeah, as Ewan was saying there, there's some that's a really strange one. I really got blindsided by that. And it's clear that Simeone had absolutely no interest in that player, I'd imagine, from the get-go.
It's very strange because, as you mentioned, there was a lot of praise for Jota after he joined. Early days in preseason, throughout preseason, that there were a lot of praise directed his way, and including that option to buy. It's a pretty substantial option to buy. Right? 22 million euros, not bad, but not even really getting a chance. Jota's not really even getting a chance to show what he can do.
Yeah, it's worrying.
It's a very strange one.
It's worrying that because Simeone has a good control of the squad there now, and he's obviously been a very successful manager at Atletico. But I'd worry about who's going to come in next, because obviously the people, I suppose, like, obviously the influences there from outside the club, maybe inside it, are obviously still not great. So if someone comes in that's not as strong-willed as Simeone and who doesn't have as much influence as Simeone, what's it going to be like? That's worrying, like, you know, that those influences are still there.
That's a fair point.
Yeah, I mean, looking back at when Simeone first arrived, it was almost what you're talking about there, Robbie, but just before it even happened, you read some of the Atleti journalists in Spain, like Ruben Uria, for example. He was talking when Simeone came in, saying this is exactly what the club needs, is someone who's going to turn around to the board and say, no, you're not selling this player, or I want this guy, you need to go and get him. And they were really excited for him coming in, and he seems to have done exactly that over the last 5 years. But now you think, well, when he goes, that doesn't mean that the club is going to have changed. I mean, he might have rubbed off on them a little bit. But imagine when they go to someone else who isn't, you know, an Atleti legend, who has that influence, and also someone who's as strong-willed as Simeone. I think, you know, the next guy is going to have far, far less of a say when it comes to picking the squad, and that could be problematic.
Yeah, and that first 6 to 8 months is going to be crucial if he doesn't, the new manager, whoever it happens to be, and whenever that happens to be, whoever it is, if he doesn't have success in just games for the first 6 to 8 months, he could be dropped fairly quickly, and then you're into a kind of a bad space again. So yeah, that's quite worrying, to be honest with you. Yeah.
You'd be in a situation like Atletico were in for years, and ending before they appointed Simeone in 2011.
Yeah.
So let's hope it doesn't come to that. That's hopefully in the far future for everyone involved with Atletico. Okay, let's dive right into the Alaves game. And this was, what a game this was. You and you were talking before we went on the air. You were talking about how you had to write your gamer, and now it's a stale goalless draw. Oh, wait, Atletico looked to have nicked it. Oh, no, Alaves have gotten the draw.
Yeah, it changed
very quickly.
A few times in the last 2 minutes, but before that, it obviously hadn't changed very much at all. It all happened after the 90. It all happened on Monday morning, funnily enough, because the game kicked off so late that by the time the goals actually came, it was Monday morning in Madrid. So, yeah.
My friends were laughing. We went to the Dundalk game in Dublin last Tuesday night, and we were walking out of the stadium, and I said, oh, I'm going to go home now and watch Barcelona and Sevilla. And they were like, well, did you record it? And I said, no, it's starting now. And they were like, what do you mean? I said, it's 10 o'clock at night, which means it's 11 o'clock in Spain. And I was like, oh, yeah, they just that's the way they operate. And they couldn't believe it. They were like, they thought there was some mix-up, or there was that I was not lying, but they thought that I got my information wrong. But yeah, it's crazy that those two goals are scored so late at night, like on a Sunday night. But it was I won't say heartbreaking when that goal went in, but it was rough, like, given the fact that probably out of all three games between Real Madrid, Barcelona, and Atletico, they got probably got the handiest one. They were at home against a newly promoted side that you figure would have been overawed by Atletico, and actually were for large parts of it. They didn't even try to attack for most of it, and just to be hit with that sucker punch, it was really tough to take.
Yep, not the best start to the season. Atleti already playing catch up to Barcelona and Real Madrid, as they both won over the weekend in pretty impressive fashion. Let's start from the beginning with this one. Simeone's 11 received some criticism. Gabi and Thiago both started in the middle of the park, and which meant Koke and Saúl were forced wide. Saúl actually played a second striker in the first half, which was very strange to see, as Carrasco dropped off to the wing. What was your guys' take on the 11? And even though Atleti played pretty well, and this was an 11 that we didn't see very often last season, it's an 11 that came really out of the 2014-15 season.
Do you want to go first, Robbie?
No, you go ahead there, Ewan, if you want.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the main thing going into this one was obviously they didn't have Griezmann, and you had to wonder how he was going to try to get some creativity in there, because although Alaves were a newly promoted team, they won the Segunda Division last year playing some properly negative football, as I think the whole world saw on Sunday night. And all pre-season, they were set up in a 4-5-1 with Toquero, who's back in the Liga. They had him right up the top, but everyone else was dropping back. So it was no surprise that there was going to be a defensive lock needing unpicked. Alaves didn't surprise me at all, the way they set up. But yeah, it did surprise me that you had so many central midfielders for Atletico when you probably wanted a bit of pace on the wings. You wanted to get crosses into the box. Instead, they were mostly going through the middle, which was exciting. But then they would get to the edge of the box, there'd be nothing on, and they would shoot. And they came close, fair enough, with a few of those long shots. But it was peculiar that there wasn't someone like Gaitán or Torres, either one of them, starting. And then when they both came on in the second half, they looked a lot more dangerous going down especially the left-hand side in the second half.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I don't really, and I wrote about it actually after, I don't really get it. Like Ewan was saying, Alaves were always going to sit back, and I understand it's almost like Simeone, he's built probably the best defence we've seen this in the last 4 or 5 years, and or in Europe, and he's got this you'd say world class goalkeeper, young goalkeeper there, and he's so proud of his defensive record that he doesn't want to lose that. When on the flip side of it, by opening it out a little bit and exposing them a little bit more, and they'll be fine, by the way, if you do expose them, just expose them a slight bit more, you will reap the rewards. But he seems just a little bit cautious of it, and against Alaves, I think he should have, like, I don't understand it, Nico Gaita, like, I understand the fact that he was trying to kind of squeeze players in due to loyalty and like players that had been there, like Carrasco had to start because he had played so well in the Champions League final, and I suppose he's not even the real issue here. It's the choice between Koke or between Thiago, Gabi, and then Saúl's positioning. So, and I get that there's a sense of loyalty. It's a nice story, Thiago coming back and starting, but there was no real need for him there or in order to break them down. And if they had gotten a run on them in the first half and scored one early on, like, they could have opened up the floodgates there and scored 3 or 4, but they just didn't, and they almost wasted that first 45 minutes with kind of slow, laborious build-ups and no real chances, like, you know. And as Ewan said as well, Griezmann was missing, which is massive, but it's still, I'd have my criticisms of his selection, definitely, first 11.
Yeah, you can't come out in that defensive setup, especially at home to a newly promoted side. You have, I think, yeah, at least you have to attack from the outset. And these are the kind of teams you bought Gaetan to play against. The teams that just sit deep against Atleti and try to frustrate them instead of, you know, having possession and letting Atleti run on the counterattack. This is what Gaetan was signed for, not necessarily to beat Alaves in August, but this kind of mentality. He was signed to kind of defeat this mentality and make Atletico a much more attacking team. Gamero's miss at the end of the first half with about 10 minutes to go. That was, how do you miss that? How do you miss that? A brilliant ball from Juanfran to Koke on the wing, and Koke with a great low cross into Gamero, who's about 7 yards out, and he just skies it.
Yeah, I was...
That to me was the chance.
Yeah, I think I was... If you look at it from the angle behind the goal, he kind of took a stutter step just before he did it. And look, he's a striker that costs a lot of money, and he's playing in the top league in Europe. He should be scoring it, but it was a little bit awkward. It came at him very fast, and it just caught kind of... He took a step just before it, which forced him to not just let it hit off his shin or something, and he had to. And look, I could make excuses for him all day. He should have scored it, but yeah, that was a huge chance. And like, had that gone in, you would have maybe seen him getting a hat trick, because Alaves would have had to come out a little bit more. And but like, we didn't, and it resulted in the way it did. And then he totally emptied the bench. And at that point, it was panic mode, like, because the time was ticking down. Atletico knew that. The Alaves knew that. They were sitting back deeper and deeper. And it just, And in writing that piece on the Monday, I was kind of critical of the Simeone, which is fine. I wouldn't be overly critical, but if he doesn't learn from this, then I'd be really critical. If he doesn't learn from this now and go and change it when he's playing a supposed weaker team, you would have worries. If this happens again in the next 6 months, you'd be seriously concerned. Like,
yeah, going back to that Gamero chance, it was a huge chance, and he should obviously have scored it. But it was actually probably the only chance where they got in behind the Alaves defence in that first half.
Yeah.
I think most of the first half shots were from distance. There was one where the ball kind of fell to Saul, and it almost came to him too quickly for him to you know, compose himself. But that Saul chance and the one with Gamero when Koke played them in, they were the only two where they really got one-on-one with the goalkeepers. Although they had, I think it was 27 shots.
27-2 for the game.
27-2. I think 10 of the shots I read were outside the box. So there weren't that many clear cut. It was a lot like the Liverpool-Burnley game actually at the weekend, where everyone was talking about how many shots Liverpool had. Hardly any of them were of decent quality. Yeah. They were all hot shots from outside the box. And that Gamero one was, although it was a big chance, it was almost the only chance of the first half, despite how well they played.
I remember Gabby had a really good chance towards the end of the half as well, but it was from long range. And Atleti managed a lot of possession, a lot of corners, a lot of shots, but Alaves, to their credit, were very well organized and absorbed a lot of this pressure.
Yeah, and to his credit, Saul did try to run at them and kind of tried to recreate that goal against Bayern with some nifty footwork, but
he did a good job.
Like, you can't, that's relying on a spark of genius from a player isn't really a game plan either.
But Alaves are better than Bayern, so you know, you can't pull that off twice.
Like Pep, and that's what Saul was trying to do, and you can't really put that down to being a game plan, him running through players the same as Messi or someone like, and those kind of half chances really don't add up, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep. What did you guys think of the second half? Atleti got even closer, shots clanged off the post, and obviously the fireworks at the end. In the first half, we saw a bit of 4-2-3-1 actually from Simeone, which was strange because we don't play in a 4-2-3-1 very often. And in the second half, though, Gaetan was introduced, Torres was introduced, and Atleti came closer, but still could not find that breakthrough.
Yeah, well, that's Alaves' bread and butter. Like, there was some great wing plays, some great combinations and that, but it just resulted in... There was some more clear-cut chances, but yeah, it was the same. It was like really backs to the wall stuff by Alaves, and at that point, Atletico were panicking, and you do start to snatch at chances and things like that, and it felt as though the game had been decided, maybe not early in the second half, but the game had been decided already, based on Alaves kind of got their confidence up. They took the Atletico crowd out of it a little bit by not conceding early on. It was actually similar to Las Palmas last year, and it took a Griezmann free kick in the opening day to break their spirit, but it just wasn't coming for Atletico in the opening half, and then the second half the writing almost you felt like it was on the wall.
Yeah, with Torres coming on, I mean, I think Torres his appearance was really reassuring, because it showed that when Atleti do get Griezmann back and they have a second striker, someone to play off Camero, they've got a bit of pace and they can get in behind these defences, and they've got a bit of creativity. Torres really changed the game, and he wasn't quite good enough to change it enough. But if you put Griezmann in Torres's position from the second half, Griezmann is obviously a bit better than Torres, and that kind of formation with someone with a bit of pace, a bit of creativity to play just behind Gamero, I think that will solve a lot of the issues they had in the first half.
Yeah.
I think Gamero and Griezmann are going to need each other, right? Because last season, Griezmann had to kind of do everything himself, and it didn't quite work out at the end. Gamero wasn't signed to do everything himself. He was bought to take the load off of Griezmann when he comes back. And they're going to play off each other. And Gamero, needs someone to play off of that's not, you know, Carrasco or Seppel, because neither of them was a striker.
Yeah.
So you need Griezmann or Torres even to play off of. And Torres did play very well, especially at the end with his role in the penalty that Gamero took really well, I thought.
It was actually an excellent penalty, yeah. I saw stats somewhere though that if like he takes all his penalties down that direction, he's taken whatever number, and they'd all gone that way, or else he took two that went down the middle. So if a little bit of homework from the keeper, and he would have maybe saved it. But yeah, no, it was an excellent penalty given the pressure in his debut for the club, and it was a really good penalty. But what happened after was.
But then, Manu Garcia, at the very end of added time, should Oblak have had it?
I think he would usually have it. He couldn't really save it from where he was standing, but his position was a little bit suspect, considering the only thing you have to do is not letting a goal for the next minute. But I suppose you can't really blame him, because he must have fallen asleep, because he had absolutely nothing to do with the rest of the game. I think he had one other shot and it went wide, and so he had to take a goal kick, and that was really it. But yeah, considering there was just 1 minute of play left, you'd have thought he would be maybe a little bit more alert. But it was, you know, sometimes you get these wonder strikes and you just can't really stop them.
Yeah, and I think even Manu Garcia didn't know what was going on, because he I don't know who it was coming up behind him, Correa maybe or Koke, but he said in Sid Lowe's column for The Guardian, he said that he told him that he thought he was going to foul him. He thought Koke or whoever it was coming up behind him was going to foul him, and then he said, okay, he didn't feel the tackle coming in. He was like, okay, so what, like, there's space here. What do I do? I wasn't expecting this. And this is the problem then with having taken Thiago and Gabby off. You were forced into bringing all your attacking players in order to get the goal, and then you've left that gap in front of the back four that's never there. Typically, there's always at least one player just sitting there, and they were both gone because your hand had been forced earlier. And next thing you know, Savage didn't close it down maybe as you might have liked, and buried it in the back of the net. It was an excellent strike, but yeah, it was like Ewan said, I'd say he had fallen asleep. It was nothing asked of him, and then all of a sudden, an absolute rasper from Garcia that even surprised Garcia himself. So,
and yeah, Ewan made a good point a little earlier that Atleti's defense really didn't have much to do. Savage and Godin were playing so high up the pitch the entire game, really, as Atletico just sent wave after wave of attacks at Alaves' defense.
I mean, Godin even had that one chance. And I was looking at it and I was thinking, hang on, that wasn't a free kick or a corner. That was just a cross into the box and Godin was there. He was so far up the pitch. I think he had one from the corner and then there was another one that came to him and that wasn't from the breakdown of a set player or anything. He was just that far up because, you know, there was nothing going on back in his half. So why not?
Yeah. It was a really good save, actually, also. But, yeah, like, they did have chances. This comes back to, like, I mean, in terms of, did Atletico, like, and I know we've kind of discussed it, but did Atletico not expect that? Like, they've solidified themselves as one of the top three in La Liga, and they pushed Barcelona all the way last year only for a couple of poor results at the end, and that was all fine. Being the underdog is great and it was wonderful, great story, but then it's time now to move on to the next stage, and I'm just wondering, can they shift their mindset to be that team that press up on players? And because it is a complete change of mentality, like, are we going to go out and take the game to these, because say before 2013-14 teams are going playing Atletico thinking we'll have a go here, maybe get 3 points, if not a draw, we'll settle for a draw, or, you know, but we can get 3 points, whereas then once you win the Liga and you make it to 2 Champions League finals, teams are see you on the calendar and they're going, we're just going to defend here and hope for the best that we can get a point. And all of a sudden, the whole dynamic changes when you go to play. And it's just whether or not Atletico are able to take it to that, change their mentality to take it to teams and know that, yeah, or else you're just going to get stalemates. You're just going to play, every game is going to be a nil-all draw because Atletico are sitting back and likewise their opponents. So, And it is difficult. They're in a difficult place at the moment because they're not quite up to the level of Barcelona taking on teams the way they do and passing the ball and things like that. Once Atletico go into Europe and they play against some of the better teams, they do have to revert back to their kind of underdog style, defensive style. But at the same time, they need to be versatile enough then that when they're playing Alaves or whoever it happens to be, that they can change and Simeone can change. So it's just going to be interesting to see whether they can do that and whether Simeone is the man to do that with them. And it'd be interesting. Leganés were absolutely excellent against Celta on Monday, and maybe they will have more of a go, which will suit Atletico down to the ground because they'll be able to get in behind and they'll be able to defend like they do, but push on also.
Yeah, I think
it was interesting watching the Leganés game. Was they played with a back five against Vigo, which they hadn't done at all last season. And it sort of made sense, you know, they're in the big league now, they're playing away from home against a Europa League team. So they played five at the back, and I think that, having seen that, you know, have some success against Vigo, I've seen the Alaves game as well, and I reckon they'll just copy that template that Alaves set out at the weekend because they partly used it in their game against Vigo and it worked. They saw Alaves use it against Atletico, so I can't really imagine Leganés deciding to abandon the Alaves template and going for it at the weekend. So, you know, Atletico will probably have round two of the same next weekend, and yeah, they'll have Griezmann back, but you'll have to see if they can break them down this time.
Yeah, I just thought that Leganés had a little bit more attacking intent, and
oh yeah, I think we first, do. Yeah.
In the first 20 minutes, sure, they just kind of tried to nullify, and Celta Vigo had loads of the ball and they were attacking and they had a couple of kind of half chances, but and Leganés were soaking it all up. But then as soon as they kind of got to grips with them and figured it out, it got up to the pace of the game, they started pressing on a bit, and I thought Guerrero was excellent, far more efficient than Takeiro was for Alaves, and they had a couple of chances, and they said to themselves, like,
we can win this.
We've a chance here, and we're not going to maybe settle for a point. Because even after they scored, it wasn't a case of, right, sit back and defend. They actually had another couple of chances. Now, granted, Celta Vigo had pushed up fairly high at that stage, and they were getting in behind. But they were... I thought they had far more about them than Alaves did against Atletico. Like, they didn't ever once look like testing Atletico, whereas once Leganés did come to terms with Celta Vigo's attack, and they started actually pushing on, getting chances, and I thought they were absolutely excellent, to be fair.
Yeah, their best player wasn't even playing, their best attacking player anyway. Szymanowski, who scored the most goals for them last year, he was on the bench, he didn't get on, so they can only get
better.
Well, he had a bit of a fitness concern last season, and he didn't play every week, so I don't know if it was something like that or if it was a tactical thing. They have brought in new players in the summer, so maybe he's no longer the starting player. He was a left winger, so maybe he's kind of been... I've not seen much of the pre-season at all, but maybe he's been played out of a position by the guy Lopez, I think, who started. But last season, he was excellent, so if they bring him on, they've got, you know, something from the bench that they could use if they... you know, want to really go for a game. So that should worry Atletico if he starts or features at the weekend, because, you know, the attacking team that set out against Vigo wasn't even, you know, potentially full strength.
Yeah, not and what really impressed me was that they never once did they panic, because Celta Vigo are quite a lively team, like, obviously, and they throw the ball around and they attack you from different angles. They're willing to go down the middle, you know, more route one, they go down the take you on down the left and right, no problem. And then not once did Leganés panic, it seemed. I just felt like they were really confident, and I'd be kind of concerned. Well, not concerned, because if they do press on a slight little bit more, then Atletico will have a chance to get it behind. But never once did Leganés panic. Maybe the last 5 minutes, I suppose, when Celta Vigo really started to pile it on. But I thought they were excellent, so it'll be interesting to see when Szymanowski comes back.
It's going to be such a huge moment for Leganés, because it's their first La Liga home game, you know, a week after a famous result at a very tough place to win at Balaidos. Very difficult place to go and take 3 points.
In their first ever game in La Liga.
Yep. And Victor Diaz got the goal. Really nice little build-up, about 15 minutes from time, to seal the result. And I think we have to see a more attacking Atletico. Yeah, I'm not sure Leganés are going to sit back. They're at home. They want to, you know, it's your first home game in La Liga. You kind of want to press on and push on and say, hey, we can do this again.
I don't know if the home crowd will be that much of a factor. I mean, I've been at games at Leganés before where it's been kind of full, and the stadium's, it's quite weird. It's like, it's just basically an open bowl. And
it's a really small stadium too.
Yeah, there's not really much of an atmosphere even when it's full. So although it's the first game of the season, and you think, you know, it's going to be a fever pitch and everyone's going to be really excited, there will be, but that might not translate to the players. So, I mean, some of these compact grounds like Alaves, when they play games in Alaves, it's going to be tough because that crowd's going to roar them on and force them to attack a little bit. But Leganés, the atmosphere, even when it's full and the fans are doing all they can, it never really seems to have that much of an effect, because it is a bowl, so all the noise just kind of escapes.
Yeah, yeah,
so
it's not like
sure
it's
they're
going to
have that much of a home advantage this season. Yeah.
Yeah, 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 yeah. I'm not actually sure what Leganés, and maybe, like, typically what you want to do I think what managers typically do is when they're fighting relegation is a point a game is usually like the marker as to if we can get a point a game, we'll probably stay up. So I mean, they might be looking at it going, we didn't expect to beat Celta Vigo, we have, let's go out and give it a go against Atletico. Or they might say
exactly.
Or they might say, we've got three now. Imagine we expected to have zero after the first two games. So if we draw with Atletico, sit back and go for the draw, then we might imagine having four after two. That'd be an excellent return from them first two games. And they might go and sit back, completely just sit back and soak it all up, and knowing that Atletico are not incapable, but maybe a little bit unwilling to go all out.
Yeah,
because then you'd have 36 rounds to get 36 points, essentially, and really secure safety, assuming a draw at the weekend.
Yeah, and that'd be massive for them. They'd be looking at those first two games. Now, listen, they might be a lot more ambitious than I'm making them out to be, and they might have been confident going into that Celta Vigo game. But travelling up to Vigo, playing Atletico, then the week after, I can't imagine maybe one point they chalked themselves down for, hoping that they could manage it. What do you think, Ewan? Do you think that they, or will they be happy with 4 points after two games?
Well, I think they'd be thrilled. They're probably going to be happy with three, even if they lose this one. Maybe they'll just rest all their starters and try again elsewhere. It'll be easy for Atletico. But no, I can't see them doing that. They've got nothing to lose, really. So yeah, like you say, they might just go all out, because even if they lose 5-0, they've done better than they thought they would from the first two games. So yeah, it could be. But as we were saying before, if they do start attacking Atletico, maybe that plays into their hands. So maybe you want them to attack, maybe you don't. It's for most teams, I think you probably want them to sit back and leave you alone. But with Atletico, you kind of want them to invite them on and then hit them in the counter attack.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It'll be an interesting one. But yeah, big occasion for Leganés. You know, the only team, obviously, now with 100% La Liga record. They won't want to lose that. So we'll see how that goes.
Yeah.
Try to go 2 for 2 at the weekend.
Yeah.
What 11 can we expect from Atletico? Do we expect Gaitán and or Torres to start this week?
Ewan, do you want to take that one?
Griezmann's playing. I don't think Torres will. Simeone said after the game that. He said Torres played well, but it's Griezmann's a starter, so he seems to be...
Griezmann's the number nine, yeah.
He seemed to be making that decision between either Griezmann or Torres.
Yeah, and I'd imagine we'll see Gaitán as well. I'm not entirely sure as to why he didn't start, because I think it was just kind of maybe a kind of a token gesture towards the likes of Carrasco and that, and showing you were here kind of before, you played well in the Champions League, you've earned this start. But I mean, if Gaitán is fit enough to play the last 45, he would have been fit enough to. I don't know. I don't even think fitness was an issue, but he I'd imagine he'll start at the, because he did have an influence, and if he had have started, I think it might have been a completely different game. He was so his crosses were so dangerous into the box, some of them, and even himself getting involved and trying to make his way into the box, and he did have make a difference. So I'd imagine we're going to see him starting next week.
Yeah, I think the token gesture was kind of more towards Thiago, honestly. His first start since last November, when he broke his leg against Espanyol, and Thiago's inclusion kind of slowed play down a little bit. Atletico still played well, but couldn't finish any chances, and had play was slowed down, reduced to a lot of long-range chances. Gaitán starting will change everything. I'm not sure if this is the week Atleti decide to roll out the 4-3-3. I'm not sure if we're gonna see that. Cholo might just go back to the 4-4-2, just with Griezmann and try again. Very easily could see that happening.
Mm. Yeah, I suppose I have to wait and see what kind of messages Simeone is getting from Leganés. I'm sure he's got people keeping an eye on them, seeing what they're gonna do and try to outthink them, and. It might be based on how they're going to line up. If they're gone more attacking, he might choose to pick Thiago and Gabi. But I'd say after, and I didn't hear that much criticism of him in the press, or there was no big and rightly so, there was no big hoopla made about it. But I'm sure he knows himself that he kind of played it a bit too safe. So I'd imagine we'll see Thiago drop to the bench and. Griezmann step in, and Gaetan step in for Carrasco, I'd say.
Yeah, we do have a... Sense, right? Oh, go ahead.
No, just, yeah, that would make sense. I wouldn't be surprised if that's what he goes for.
Yeah. We do have a question on Torres in the mailbag this week. Alfred Rodriguez at Los Patos 15. What do you think Simeone's message was when he started with Torres on the bench against Alaves? Is there no faith in Torres?
Ewan?
I don't think so, because that's the guy he turned to when it all wasn't going too well. I don't think he expected the first half to be so difficult. So the fact that he turned to Torres in adversity probably means the opposite. He's probably trusted Torres to go and, you know, okay, we're not doing so well, go on and sort this out for us.
Yep, I agree with that.
Yeah, exactly. And I like, it's not like a 22 or 23, 24-year-old kid who needs that kind of... Fernando Torres knows where he stands at Atletico. He knows where he stands, I'm sure, with Simeone. I'm sure they've got a fairly grown-up relationship. And it was just the way the team was selected. And Gamero was brought in as a big summer signing, playing, getting the chance to make his debut in front of a home crowd against a team they probably expected to score two or three against. Following the struggles of Jackson Martinez, Simeone... And Torres, I'm sure, was aware of this. Get him out there, get him maybe on the score sheet early, get his confidence going, and everyone will benefit from it. So, yeah, I'd say Torres will be just fine. And at the end of the day, he's no spring chicken anymore. It's not like it's 28-year-old Torres or 27-year-old Torres. He's aware that he is going to be playing a somewhat limited role this year.
We talked about this in the season preview. El Nino still has a role to play with Atletico in 2016-17 as kind of a bigger striker, one that can run the channels, one with a lot of experience in the big moments. Torres will still have a role to play, and we'll have to get deeper into the season. You know, it's obviously August 24th. We can't make any sweeping conclusions, but we'll have to get a little deeper into the season before we see that kind of role develop. But I think rest assured he's going to have a role to play on this team. I think Simeone regained his faith in him over the course of 2016 to this point. And unless something drastic happens, I don't really see that dissipating.
No, completely.
Now, the best and worst performers of the weekend, this is something we'll try to do for every Coach Nero chat following a La Liga, Champions League, Copa del Rey game. Following every game, basically. Best and worst performance of the weekend. We'll start with Robbie.
Best was probably... Godin played very well of what was asked of him. There was a couple of times he kind of turned Alaves defenders. Was solid when called upon, had a couple of chances. He did get forward, which is kind of strange for a centre-half, especially the style of centre-half he is. Or maybe Saul did his best. He tried hard, but there was very few. Felipe Luis was excellent, actually, down the left-hand side also. Some really nice combinations. Again, it was kind of a more for an effort than actual anything of substance. But yeah, probably Felipe Luis. I'll stick with Felipe Luis, yeah. And then worst was... I don't know, actually, to be honest with you. Like, Thiago, again, it wasn't that they actually did anything wrong. It was more of an ineffectiveness, say, of a Thiago, based on the fact that the game didn't suit him and it was unnecessary there. I'll tell you who I'm actually concerned about, and it might be too early. I'm actually concerned about Koke. I don't know what his... Like, he's almost a victim of his own versatility and his own willingness and his own relationship with Simeone, that he'll do literally anything that's asked, which is fine and that's great, and you look for that in a player, and he is one of my favourite players. I think Koke is excellent. I just do worry sometimes he gets a little bit lost sometimes in what he's trying to do and what he's supposed to do, and I thought he was a little bit lost out there on Sunday night, based on what we know he can do, and based on I wasn't entirely sure what his role was.
He's a player who can do so much, and he's a very versatile player. You've seen him play on the left wing, left hand side of midfield before. He's best in the center of the park. He's excellent passer, primary set piece taker, superb, I think, defensive type of midfielder. Always tracking back with gusto, always running very hard and inspiring the team. He's worn the captain's band several times, and he's only 24 years old. But nailing down a precise role for Koke has always been kind of tough because he can do so much. It's because he can do so much that he's so important to Atletico, but he doesn't have one specific role where Simeone says, okay, do this, that's all we need you to do. Koke is asked to do a lot.
What do you think, Ewan?
Yeah, no, I fully agree with that. I mean, last season he was just fantastic, the link-up he had with Griezmann. And we were talking earlier about how Griezmann will have to build up a relationship with Gamero. I think Koke's relationship with Gamero is almost as important because he was supplying Griezmann last season so much of the time. So many of Griezmann's goals came from Koke. I think they were the best assist combination in the whole league. But he's going to have to build that up with Gamero as well. And on Sunday, we obviously saw that with the chance that Gamero missed in the first half. But other than that, they struggled to build up any link between midfield and Gamero. But I think that's partly down to the fact that he didn't have the optimal position on the field to do that. So it's hard to find a place for him. But wherever he is, he's going to have to supply Gamero as much as Griezmann's expected to do so.
Yeah, and it is that kind of sense of responsibility that he has. Maybe if you could just tell him to kind of lose his shackles a little bit, and I know that's kind of counterintuitive, but tell him not to worry as much about his defensive side, if that's possible, and tell him just to kind of go and create and be that guy, because he can be, and yeah, he was excellent last year, but that was kind of more the second half of last year. It took him a while to get into the year and kind of figure out that role. And that's just why I'd worry about him, and it just worries, like, the fact that, like, you saw the likes of even Saul being linked away last year, and you saw Andre Gomez going for such a big price to Barcelona, and Koke in 2 and 3 years ago, he was being linked with that move away, and then all of a sudden teams, not that you want your best players linked with moves away, but it seems like even other clubs are kind of looking at him going, what is he like, what where do you fit here, where would you fit? Or but I mean, look, he's absolutely excellent, and as I say, he is. I love watching him play, and when he is in the mood, like Ewan was saying, and he's supplying. He's absolutely fantastic, and he does have real nuance to his game that's hard to find.
Yeah, definitely. Ewan, your best performer of the weekend, worst performer of the weekend.
Yeah, I completely agree with Robbie, with Felipe Luis. I mean, he was excellent. He almost seemed to get a bit bored of having nothing to do, and he just really took the game up that left wing, especially in the second half. I think it was the first minute after half time, he just burst up the field and had the shot. He really seemed to be trying to drag the game towards Alves' goal, and everything he was asked to do in defence, he did as well as he usually does. So he impressed me a lot, as did Torres when he came on. I think he made a huge difference.
And the worst?
Worst? I think as much as he did well with the penalty, I think Gamero has to be a contender for missing that one in the first half and the one where Pacheco blocked him in the second. But I'd probably give it to Oblak, actually. He only had one thing to do the whole game, and he was a little bit suspect with that one thing. So it's he didn't do much wrong at all, but he only was called into action once. And yeah, it was a tricky shot, but he had one job to do and he didn't really do it. So yeah, maybe Oblak's a contender.
You'll see him on that Twitter
account. It's a bit harsh with such a small sample size, a bit harsh, but yeah.
It's harsh on Oblak.
Yeah, just with such a small sample size,
I mean,
he might have made 7 other great saves if he had been asked to make them, but
yeah. Yeah, I suppose that's the difference between world class goalkeepers and the tier below them, is that they have that concentration and they're able to do that. And it's almost a cliche now where you hear it, but that is what he's there to do. And if he didn't, as you said, his positioning was a little bit suspect on it, and he completely took him by surprise. You do have to ask questions, like.
I think for the only time this season we're going to have the same best player. I really enjoyed how Felipe played. Really think he did a good job. His combination play was excellent. Melded really well his defensive responsibilities with attacking prowess. Thought he played great. Also liked how Carrasco played, even though he played only 70 minutes. Thought he was great on the ball. Was a bit surprising to see him get the number 10 shirt, but I think he's going to make it his own. It was a unique choice, and I commend how unique it was, and I think we can expect a big year from Carrasco. I thought he played well too. Worst performer?
Go for it.
Oblak, I think, is the popular choice, but I don't think Savage had a great game. Mm-hmm. Especially in the first half, he looked really shaky. It's obviously the first game of the season, and he and Godin played very high up the pitch for most of the game, really the vast majority of the game. But I think Savage made some errors that we didn't really see him make last season. He'll get that sorted out, of course. But I would say Savage for worst player of the weekend.
He's probably the type of defender that needs that little bit of conflict and a little bit more combative. Like when he's being asked just to play and that, I suppose he might not like, he's not used to it. It's like these players who kind of almost look for contact. He kind of needs that to get him into it, but. Yeah,
Jimenez is definitely one of those players.
Oh, he needs it.
Yes.
He searches for it.
So that is our best and worst players of the weekend. And that just about does it for us for this edition of Colchonero Chat. Any last thoughts, fellas?
No, just say thanks to Ewan for coming on. An absolute gentleman.
Yeah. Ewan, thanks so much. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, and it might be the first time there's a unanimous agreement about the best player of the week, but I don't think it'll be the first time that Felipe Luis is the best player that we're talking about. I mean, he's going to be brilliant this season.
He's a fun player to watch.
Fantastic player. Make sure you follow us on Twitter. It was our pleasure, Ewan. Follow us on Twitter at Into the Calderon. Like us on Facebook as well. Follow our personal accounts at JB Barron, at Robbie J. Dunn, at E. McTier, and we will catch you next time. Thanks so much for listening. Adios.